Welcome to the Do Good to Lead Well podcast. If you're passionate about mastering self-leadership, then you're in the right place. I have always been curious about and fascinated by the pursuit of leadership excellence. This is why I pursued my PhD in psychology with a specialization in business, and I've continued to dedicate my career to understanding the science and practice of positive leadership. My name is Craig Dowden. I'm a best-selling author, award-winning keynote speaker, executive coach, and member of the Forbes Coaches Council. Each week, I'll bring you world-class content on the science and practice of positive leadership. Through my conversations with best-selling authors, TED speakers, and top CEOs, you'll be able to leverage their insights and experience so you can maximize your potential and be the leader the world needs you to be. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Do Good to Lead Well webinar and podcast series. So great to see you here. Always enjoy having our conversations and digging deep into questions around positive leadership with amazing guests. And so for those of you who are return listeners and attendees, it's really great to have you with us. For those of you who are new, really excited that you've joined us today, and I couldn't imagine a better and more engaging episode for you to be a part of. And my guest today is fortunately a return guest to the program. So it's Yousry Bissada, the CEO of Home Capital Group. And he was appointed as president and CEO on August the 2nd, 2017. He's had more than 30 years of financial services experience focusing on the mortgage industry. He was CFO of First Line Trust, VP of Servicing Operations for CIBC Mortgages, SVP of Real Estate Secured Lending Products at TD Canada Trust, CEO of Flogix, and President and CEO of Canatex Limited. He currently serves on the board of Home Capital Group Board of Directors, as well as First Service Corporation, and has held numerous roles on the boards of companies in the mortgage industry. He's also served on the boards of Canadian Financial Corporation, Paradigm Quest, Street Capital Financial Group, and Equity Financial Holdings. So as you can see, an extraordinary background. He took over Home Capital Group during a time of tremendous challenge and upheaval, and he was facing extraordinary pressures and obstacles and really turned it around remarkably. And in fact, this was recently featured in the Globe and Mail as its feature story. Yousry, thank you so, so much for joining us today. I always love our conversations. You're so engaging and so passionate, and you've had such an extraordinary journey. So great to see you. Welcome to the program.
My pleasure. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
When you took over, I think it's such a fascinating origin story, and so many things were happening. And when we hear conversations today around resiliency and facing adversity and how to turn challenges into opportunities, this is just a gold-plated example of this. So can you tell our audience a little bit more about what was happening when you took over?
Sure. So let me take a minute to talk about before when I came and joined and the team kind of jumped in with both feet to fix what was wrong. So you can always Google Home Capital 2017, and a longer version of what I'm going to tell you will be there. But Home ran into what we call a reputational risk issue. Within a very short period of time, there was concern about liquidity, unfounded concern, but it was concern about liquidity. And when that happens, you have a run on the money. And then when that happens, other parts of the business start knocking. So in kind of a very, very short period of time, over a 2 or 3 week period, and this math doesn't work, Home had $2 billion in cash in the bank and had $2 billion withdraw in deposits and had to commit to $2 billion of fundings. It all happened at the same time, and that math doesn't go. And then the press picked up on this story, and a panic was created. To oversimplify it and not to take away from all the pain that it caused, if anybody's seen the movie It's a Wonderful Life, it's a bit like that, where during the movie, everybody came in and wanted, they had a concern about the reputation of that bank and wanted their money out. And exactly like in A Wonderful Life, there's some money in the bank, but really the investments of assets are taking depositors' money. So a GIC, a whole bunch of GICs turn into a mortgage. So you can't liquidate fast enough. And You know, there are liquidity measures that are regulated. You have to have a certain amount, assuming a certain amount leaves. But, you know, that big, that fast was very, very difficult. That was just part of the problem. But there were a series of events that all happened at the same time that created a panic. So what happened was most of the board was terminated. The management team was terminated, including the CEOs. And things went in a bit of a free fall until Berkshire Hathaway, in June of 2017, before I got here, invested, they bought the maximum they could. A regulated financial institution, you can't buy more than 20% without permission of the other shareholders. So they bought the maximum they could and also gave a $2 billion line of credit. And that began calming down. It didn't entirely calm down, but it began a bit of calm. And I joined a little bit later. I joined in August, as you mentioned, of 2017. By the time I got here, you know, there was a lot of things to deal with. There was, the employees were in a bit of PTSD because as the company was going through this, the management of the company, rightly so, was dealing with the outside events, with the analysts, with the regulators, with the shareholders. They didn't turn around and try to update the employees. So the employees were getting their information in the newspaper, like everybody else. And of course, some panic happened and about a third of the company had resigned. In a very short period of time. There were, of course, concerns from the regulators. There were concerns from the analysts. There were concerns all over. So by the time I came, difficulty was, what do you do first when you have so much to do? Having to pick and understand and do one at a time is not always easy. Because if I pick A, B, and C, someone will say, well, we really got to do D and F. One of the things I did was survey the board. We had a fantastic board trying to deal with all these issues, giving me support to go do my job. I went to the board and said, help me prioritize. Give me what you think are the top three things that I should do. And at the time, there were 10 board members. So I did that. And when I collated the information, there were over 20 things to do. So they weren't even agreeing on what the top three are. So again, I went back to the board and said, so here's the problem. I'm not that good. I cannot do 21 or so big. In fact, it's probably 50, but these are the 21 or so things they thought were the top priorities. I'm not that good. And I use an alligator analogy. I'm a really, really good alligator wrestler, but one at a time. And maybe I can stick my foot out and kick one or kick two, but I cannot wrestle 21 alligators. So here is what I'm going to take. And they were very supportive. Here's the three things I'm going to focus on first. And when we get that calm, we'll take more on. And so on. Another analogy, my daughters and I use this all the time, is when you're overwhelmed, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. So I picked my first three bites. People first. You couldn't run a company when people were exiting as fast as possible. And we wanted to also make sure that if we took care of the people and we got them to believe in the company and they were going to service our clients again, that the clients would start becoming happy. And if the clients became happy, they'll take care of the shareholders. But of course, when you have what we had, it's not an overnight job. The focus was on the people, getting people back in, getting leadership that knows how to manage in this kind of situation. And, you know, when I came in and they said, oh, 300 people resigned out of 900. I thought, I'm a pretty seasoned CEO. I know what to do here. So I authorized HR, go hire up people. If you're going to do business in mortgages, you need underwriters. If you're going to do business and raise deposits, you need people to understand that. You need accountants who can keep track of it all. And we lost across the board a lot of people. So I said to HR, go hire. Go. I give you authority. Go hire. Board supported me. Everybody was go. Except HR came back and said, well, we got a problem. There isn't anybody who's going to leave their current job to come here because they believe it's not going to survive. So the pool of people that we can hire from are the unemployed pool. Somebody has nothing to lose. Well, it's very difficult to staff, you know, that many people in particular jobs in a hot market. So underwriters all have jobs. They're not unemployed. You know, finance people all had jobs. They're not employed. So my focus was on that and to get executives that were good leaders and start talking about the assets of home are great. This is a great company. This is a fundamental part of the mortgage business. And slowly, and I can talk about it more if you want, build that and get it settled. So that was my first priority in my first few months.
Well, and I love that. And I think it's such a powerful piece around all the different So a couple of really intriguing insights for me. As you say, you go out and you enlist, you ask the board, hey, what do you think I should do? And then there's just so many different priorities that are there. And I love, and here's our first question, so I'm not surprised. This is great. You know, you talk about that people first philosophy. So Keith was wondering, so very refreshing to hear someone and a CEO in particular talk about people first. What do you think causes people sometimes to not be considered? You hear about business transformations and things going on and employees are left out. Like what's happening to that and how can we change that where we do go people first?
Yeah, I just think there's just many different kinds of leadership and leaders and different kind of leaders suit different situations in different times. So not trying to overcomplicate it. You know, if you've led a group of people on your intellect and have had a lot of success, you're going to keep betting on your intellect. But if you've led and, you know, have worked through people to get your objectives accomplished and that's been successful for you, you're probably going to go and go through people some more. So I think it's just your early experiences, your mentor, your own DNA, you know, and how you're made and your own experiences that have brought you to success. So I think boards and leaders themselves will pick other leaders. You have to pick the right situation for the right leadership. And it isn't always right for every single circumstance. You know, you wind up with maybe the right leader for the first few years and then the situation changes and they can't evolve their leadership. There's a whole bunch of circumstances where it sounds like the wrong leadership is leading, but you've just got to, as a board, put the right leader and then ask them to do. It's a very important role being the president because you're affecting a lot of other people in the company and how the leadership is going to be and how they're going to behave. So, you know, I'm entrusted with that responsibility to get the right culture to move the problem that we had and to solve the problem that we had.
I love that. And thank you. And Amanda, there's more. The questions are coming in, which is great. So Amanda was wondering, again, love the reference for people first. Are you able to share some of the practices, some of the things that you did to rebuild or regain trust during this really challenging time?
Yeah, no, did a few things. The first was trying to stop the bleeding of these stars moving to all our competitors. And the competitors are merciless. They weren't feeling sorry for us. I don't think any of them wanted. No competitor wanted us to die, but it was an opportunity for them to steal very, very good people. So one of the things is I met with everyone in the company. So we did these small one-hour meetings of 60 people at a time. It took me a couple of weeks to get through the whole company, one-hour meeting. And I did some opening comments. And the opening comments were, I understand where you are. I need to understand you're concerned. Here's what I think home is great. Here's what home is in the marketplace. And if you leave, I understand, and I'm really sorry, but I hope you stay and are part of this story. And I believe it took me 10 to 13 meetings to get through the entire company, but everybody was there. And in the first few meetings, I didn't get a single question. There, you could hear a pin drop and everybody's trying to figure me out and figure it out. But I always ended with, nothing I've told you is a secret. I'm doing this with everyone. Feel free to tell them what I'm going to tell them. Tell them what you think. Tell them whatever. Feel free. Go out and disseminate. By about the third or fourth one, two, three questions. By the last one, I couldn't even get my intro in. They had all these questions and they were ready to go. So that was good to engage and hear what they're feeling. That was one. The other is we needed to rally around something. The something was that I chose was values. Every company has values. And I'm sure everybody's seen these amazing values that hang up in the meeting room and they sound like we will respect all our coworkers and we will treat them well. And they're all really, really good. But most employees couldn't recite them without reading them, even though they'd say, I believe that value. It's a good one. We wanted to be a little bit different. And we worked on values that were 3 to 5 words long. I failed on a couple of them, but 3 to 5 words long maximum and did not need a paragraph to explain it. I wasn't prepped for this, but it just happened. Everyone has it on their desk, including me. I'll just show them. Here's our values. Very simple things like protect our home. When home got beat up on reputation, so the issue here is don't do anything that hurts our reputation. Don't. And if you have to think, will this hurt my reputation? Probably will. So don't. Uncomplicate. Very simple. Just uncomplicate. Don't make life complicated. Win as a team. It's the way we say teamwork is important. Know your business. Execute with excellence. The way we deal with customer service, amaze them every time. Again, I can keep reading them. Act with urgency. Say yes first. It's so easy to go with an idea and say, oh, we thought about that 3 years ago. It doesn't work. Say yes first. Listen, hear them. You can say no later, but let the whole idea flow. Be proud of our home. So you see me wearing this pin. I wore this pin from the day I joined, and I ordered a bunch of them. And I said, I want you to walk around downtown proud, not, oh, I work for home, which was in the newspaper every single day. I want you to be proud and say, I work for home. We're helping it. And then the last one is work hard and play hard. We're going to have some fun too. This isn't all business. So those values really helped rally everyone. And we still, in orientation of new employees, talk about the values. And we say, the values are there because if you don't know what's the right thing to do and meet your commitments to home, go to the values. If it's consistent with the values, it's the right thing to do. If it isn't, it's the wrong thing to do. And these values are in our business cases. We did videos about, tell me which values your favorite and why. And, you know, we made them, we engaged them. We don't have a holiday party. We have an awards night. And the award is employees nominating other employees on each of these values. And then some judges have a very tough job of picking the winner. And we do it like Oscar style. And it's big. It's a, we put them out there. We mean them. We use them all the time in the language. So there's another part of it. Of this. And part of the hit is a lot of employees didn't quit. A lot of employees who were here for years and years didn't quit, and they wanted to see home restored. So they became champions of, you know, moving forward. So those are some of the things. There was more, but those are some of the things to go and do.
Well, I've got so many positive comments and thank yous and awesome list of values and love your passion. Usury was another message. So. And this is exactly why I was very excited that we would have this opportunity to have this conversation. I have more questions lined up here. So Tim, loved your idea about having the open forum. Were you afraid of the questions you might be asked? Like you talked about how some of the sessions there weren't any. Were you afraid? Uh-oh, what'll I do if someone asks X or Y?
Oh, no, I wasn't afraid at all. I was looking forward to it. And I got great questions. Great questions, including some I couldn't answer because A, I didn't know the answer. You know, I'm sorting it out. I said, I don't know. You know, it's too early. I'm doing this. And others I couldn't answer because we were a public company. And part of the con of being a public company is you can't even share with your own employees some information until the entire market knows. I've been a CEO for a long time, but Home was my first public company CEO. Through those, I learned to talk about this with the employees and say, I want to share everything I can with you. I want to be as transparent as I can, but sometimes I can't. And the reason I can't is because of the public. And I kind of explained 101 why I can't share with them and how they, their information, if they accidentally shared or used it to trade, we'd all be in a lot of trouble. So sometimes I said, you're going to read something in the paper and then I'll be with you within 24, 48 hours to explain what it is. But that's why that happens that way. It's not, I'm not sharing with you. So even that kind of stuff came up and people asked about what happened. Like basic questions. There was a movie at the time out, and I use a lot of movie analogies, unfortunately. It's called Dunkirk. Yeah, so Dunkirk's about a bunch of young British soldiers, and they're backed out by the enemy, and they're stuck on this beach called Dunkirk. And eventually, a whole bunch of private boats and yachts from England came down and saved as many of them as they can. They couldn't get off the island, and they were terrified young men. They were young men just terrified of dying. And I felt a bit of Dunkirk when I showed up here. The employees looked like the soldiers, scared, not knowing what to do. And I come along and I go, isn't this a beautiful beach? It's sunny. Who's got the tan lotion? Look at the water. It's beautiful. I saw something completely different. And slowly, more and more saw it that way, as a beautiful beach home. Home is a beautiful beach and that we're going to get it there. So, no, it was a great chance to talk about, you know, what was going on, what we're trying to do, and to explain it's not an overnight fix. Here's what I'm working on. I get to practice for board meetings with the employees first. Here's what I'm working on. Here's what we're trying to do. I'll let you know what works and what doesn't. I am trying to hire, and here's the problem. No one but unemployed people. So if you got friends who want to join, they're welcome. I was very, very open and transparent about the situation. I love the questions. In fact, many of the employees that I still hang out with a little more than other employees, it's because the great questions they asked in those sessions. Right. You know, they were the braver ones.
And what I love about the sessions that you ran is that, as you say, so the first several sessions, it was, you didn't get a question. And then, you know, in the context of where people are coming from, yeah, that, you know, are they going to raise their hand or are going to voice something? It's the persistence, because when you open that forum to have a conversation, exactly as you said, Yusri, it's not overnight and people are kind of going, all right, like, is this just a singular event? Is there going to be two of these? And then when they see it's a part of the fabric of who you are, people respond. I've got another question and comment. Stephanie said, I'm just amazed and applaud that you said to people, if you leave, I understand. I don't know if I could say that or if my boss would say that. Like, what gave you the courage to acknowledge that so openly with people? Like, very impressed. And how were you able to come to peace with that?
Well, a little longer version of that is I said, I understand you are getting your information from the media, and that the newspaper are painting a very difficult situation for them. I don't see it that way. But I also understand your family's reading this. Your spouses are reading this. Your kids are reading. Your mother and father are reading this. So I understand the fear, and you have bills to pay, and that you need to make sure that your mortgage payment is made and the food is put on the table, et cetera, et cetera. So if you leave, I understand. I really do. But I hope you don't, because we're going to fix this and we're going to rise to home's rightful position in the mortgage and the Canadian marketplace. You know, and again, as time went on and people got more confidence, they said they appreciated that. They appreciated that I could put myself in the shoes they're in, you know, and not just the president coming in with his big salary and saying, stay, it's going to help me. But I could understand where they were. And some did leave and some actually came back and some never came back and are still, you know, good friends of the firm.
Well, I've got another, again, the questions are coming in fast and furious. Catherine was wondering or said, I admire how transparent you are and how transparent you were in your messaging. Did anyone in the organization, your senior leadership team or your board, like push back on you on how transparent you were being? And what advice would you have, or how did you counter that challenge from others? Because would love to bring more of that transparency.
Yeah, no, the board was very supportive. There was one time where I declared I was going to be transparent and a whole bunch of people went, whoa, I don't think you can do that. And that was my first quarterly reporting. So we talked about the employees, but another problem we had is 90% of our mortgages come from mortgage brokers. And mortgage brokers are unbelievable professionals who understand mortgages so well, and they can choose which lender they send the mortgage to. So back in April, we had $2 billion coming up for funding, and we, the company, went to them and said, we can't fund your mortgages. We're going to help you find another. Now that's, if you think of a mortgage, if somebody's closing their house, and if somebody in 2 days is closing their house and relying on you to fund it, you've caused serious problems for that family, for that broker. But compliments to our competitors. They came up to the challenge. Sure, they got business, but they helped. They funded the mortgages. They helped the brokers. And I was very worried, would brokers never want to deal with us again after that? You know, like, would they ever? And they have. They've come back big time. But in the early days, we couldn't even staff underwriters to underwrite mortgages. We were not very good at the area of expertise that we're being relied on, which is to say, to be able to get people homes by a mortgage. So where the question on transparency came is on the first quarter. If you're not familiar with a public company, we do a quarterly call. I make some comments. The CFO makes some comments. We get questions from the analysts. And then we spend 2 or 3 days explaining every decision we've made in the prior quarter. And I wanted to say our service levels are not a level that the brokers should accept. It is way below. In other words, our service sucked. Oh, no, you shouldn't say that. You can't say that. You might not say that. And I was not a very seasoned public company CEO, so it's very easy to get influenced by people who have much more experience in public company. But I said, no, I got to say it. I got to say it. And I said it. So that was the only time there was some, are you being too transparent? But boy, did that pay off. I had so many brokers reach out and say, I appreciate you know the problem. I appreciate you accept the problem. And my point is, I can say our service is great, but any reporter or analyst will call any broker they know and they'll tell them it's terrible. They can't service a mortgage. They're taking too long to approve things. They don't know what they're doing. It's true. We were rehiring. We're getting started. So when I, about a year later, maybe 9 months later, I said, we have hit standards that are now acceptable to the brokers and are very proud of ourselves. That even had more meaning because we admitted when we weren't doing it well, and then we admitted when we were. And then sure enough, the analysts and everybody started calling brokers and said, yeah, they've got their act together. They're really rolling. And, you know, we've gone from that to, if I can brag for a minute, it's a team sport. Every employee here does that. In the industry, there are awards just like everything. And Home has won the best lender of the year in the mortgage space. It's not in the whole space, just in the mortgage space. The best lender, bank lender of the year, 5 times in a row. You know, nobody's ever won it 5 times in a row. The previous record was 3. Why I'm especially proud of that is I know from the days of no, you know, we told them we don't want to do your business for the next 2 weeks, to the days of being very transparent to now them voting us as the best lender in the industry.
Well, and congratulations. It's awesome. And what I love, so many things that I love about what you're sharing. I always appreciate your passion, Yusri, when we chat, and that comes through loud and clear. And I think what I'm really threading together into different examples, and I think this is such a powerful takeaway for people, and particularly, you know, I have these conversations as well about being vulnerable or being transparent about things. In your group meetings where they ask me anything, and then you say, hey, I understand your situation. If you choose to leave, I get it. But you're calling things as they are. In this circumstance, our service levels aren't where they, I can pretend it, I can blow things and make it all a big balloon of positive hot air, and it doesn't match. And the risk that people feel, the fear, I just think, again, what's amazing, and it just has shown in so many ways, both in the turnaround, the remarkable financial turnaround, the engagement turnaround, it all comes back to, and that's the common thread, right? Being authentic, being transparent about things.
Yeah. One of my mentors early in life used to say, treat your employees like they're adults. And I found that to be so simple, but so accurate. If you treat them like kids, oh, they can't handle that information. Oh, they shouldn't know that. Or we have to be very careful. Of course, we do that too. But if you treat them like adults and they can handle it, they may have a moment of more upset disappointment. But after a while, over a longer period, they're much better because they know you're always going to be consistently honest.
Absolutely. And then they know what you stand for rather than trying to figure it out in the background. And then they're going to make up their own stories anyhow about what's going on. So again, in my space, and what I love as well is what you're sharing is, again, for those of you listening around, as a guidepost to make those decisions is, okay, be as transparent as what you can with the information you have available. Hey, here's the context under which I'm operating. There are some things you're going to learn, not from me. I wish I could. I can't. And then people, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I get it.
Yeah, it is amazing how well they get it. They really, really do. Instead of making up excuses why I didn't tell them. Oh, sorry, I didn't have time or, you know. No, they get it. They get we can't tell them. And over the next few weeks, we're going to become a private company. We're being acquired by Smith Financial Corporation. And then there will be an opportunity to share a lot more, a lot faster.
Well, I've got another comment from Anthony, who says, it seems, Yusri, that you're comfortable, even excited by difficult conversations, or what most people would consider difficult conversations, like not knowing an answer or not knowing a question. How much of that is nature, nurture? Just can you tell me a little more?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd use the word excited, but I accept that you have to have them, and I don't avoid them. And I accept, you know, a bunch of concepts we've already dealt with, that if you tell people what's bothering you, they can fix it. You know, 99.99% of people, in my opinion, wake up wanting to do a good job for the company. Some don't, but it's because they think this is what's a good job. So the more honest you are about, hey, what'd you do that for? Like, that doesn't make sense. It hurt us here, there, everywhere. Most of the time you get, oh, I didn't know that. I won't do that again. You know, so I don't get excited. I don't love it. I just think it's necessary and moves you. What's that expression? This truth sets you free. You're relieved. You both move on in the right direction. And if you don't, there are occasional times where you're just not aligned. And then you make a change and everybody's happier. But most of the time you go, okay, I didn't know that was bothering the company or bothering you or bothering the board or bothering the share. Got it. Let's go.
And that's what's so great. It's not afraid of having them. Because yeah. In my experience and conversations that I have, the fear overrides us. Then we've got this narrative that goes on and we don't address it. And then to your point, it's not being taken care of. And it just grows and grows bigger and bigger and bigger. And then it becomes even more challenging.
And it gets worse and worse and worse. And then the honest conversation can be too late. And now it's like, oh, why didn't you tell me before?
Such a great insight. Exactly. Because, and back to your fundamental point about, well, treating people as adults, because, well, if we're adults here and having a conversation, we may be disagreeing. We can have different points of view. Let's just get it out there earlier. So it's not, as you go back to the beginning of our conversation, an elephant we have to eat together, something smaller so that it's not as daunting. This is great. Another question from Fred said, loved your values. Can you share a little bit more about how you built them? Any insights, any advice about, because just felt they're incredibly inspiring and powerful.
Yeah. So I had a very talented communicator working with us at the time and said, research values all over. And I didn't even know what I wanted. I wasn't as articulate about the values as I am with you now. I just said, no, I just want meaningful values. I don't want all these motherhood statements, meaningful values. And, you know, she'd go find a bunch and I go, ah. And slowly kind of the research led it to, okay, I want 3 to 5 words, self-explanatory, no more than 10. We wound up with 10 and everybody can get it. She researched all these various companies and these values, 7 of them are copies from not one company, but some company somewhere. And then we came up with our own, like protect our home was our original and be proud of our home was our original. And then the first time I pulled the leadership senior management team together, about 100 or so executives at the time, we were at a conference and they didn't know, but I was beta testing them. We were there for 2 days. And the first 5 days, I laid down the first, just before every break, I would say, okay, let me tell you our new values. Protect our home. What we went through, blah, 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 blah. Digest it. Give me questions. Give me comments. Had they come back and said, I don't like that one, I would have killed it. But so we kind of laid it on the senior management team really slowly, let them absorb, let them challenge. The one that got most challenged was uncomplicate. They said, boy, you know, uncomplicate, why don't we say simplify? There was a big debate in the room. Half wanted simplify, half wanted uncomplicate. And then the winning argument came from somebody and says, no. Simplify implies if you're going to do something new, you make it simple. But uncomplicate also says what we got. Let's unravel it a little bit. So we stuck with uncomplicate. It got the most discussion. And then based on they didn't know it was a beta test, I felt, they're accepted. Then boom, we printed them and we had this video room where you walk in and videotape which one's your favorite value and why. And everybody wore the same tie that I was wearing when I presented the values. And we made fun of it. And it was just a way to, you know, how do you get a message across? Repeat, 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 repeat. So yeah, I talked about it, but they also saw it in the videos and then we did it on email. And now it is part of the language, as I say, in business cases. And like somebody was sitting in a meeting, oh my God, can you uncomplicate that? And everybody knows what that means, you know, or somebody want to tell a customer had a great experience and the subject will be amazed them every time. You know, so the language is used all the time.
Well, and again, and thank you and so many other positive comments in here about that. And I love, as you say, it provides a common language, a vocabulary that we're using. And then we say a word, now we know what it means, as opposed to we haven't gone through this exercise, or we might have different ideas of how that looks like. And I also love that it's like a navigational compass. It's, yep. Okay, this is where we go. So no matter how turbulent the waters, we can come back to that anchor as, all right, so what do we do in this situation? Well, what do our values say? And we really live and leap by them.
Yeah, and it's an interview questions. You get to test new ones coming in, if they're going to be consistent with the values. We had the summer students introduce themselves to people and to each other, and they each did a skit on one of the values. So even in them, we're ingraining the values, because summer students quite often become full-time employees when they're finished. And then I'm most proud of when I meet a parent of a student and they tell me about the values. Oh, my daughter came home and told me about amaze them every time or whatever it is. So it's it's going deeper than just something on the wall that everybody can look and say, yeah, that makes sense. It's a little deeper than that.
No, this is great. And I've got another question on the value side. Chris said, I love that you say yes first is embedded in there, because so often, no, it's the starting point. Awesome. So can you share a little more about what made you put that into the list, say yes first, and what are the benefits, and any comments for people who are a little, no, that doesn't work?
Well, so this one's a bit of a pet peeve of mine. I hate the word no. I just hate it. No, can't do that. Or no, we won't do that. And I think you know this big secret about me, Craig. I don't know your audience does. I'm a massive Disney fan. And I'm not going to tell you how many times I've been to Disney and Disney cruise lines. But when I go on a Disney cruise line, there isn't a thing. I don't know if they're trained this way or they're just that good. They don't say no. You can walk up to the reception and say, I want 2 giraffes on my balcony and I want them eating strawberry ice cream. They won't say no. They'll say, well, we'll see what we can do, you know, and then they'll come back and say, unfortunately, you know, flying a giraffe in turned out to be complicated. So I hate the word no, and I kind of observed that. So that's why they say yes first. How many meetings, this company at the time was 35 years old. How many ideas and things get squashed? Oh, we tried that. Doesn't work. We tried that 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And then it takes away from innovation and people fostering ideas. So say, and boy, did we use that one a lot in the beginning. There's a company like us that's federally regulated. There's a lot of risk management and compliance, and it's so quick to kill ideas because that's going to be too risky. Too risky, can't do that. It's got problems here, problems there, problems everywhere. So say yes first. Open the gate for the person to present their entire idea before being told no. And the success rate of what would have been a no to actually happening is quite high. I don't keep stats, but you know, it's not zero. It's 30%, 40% maybe get actually to happen. And that's a lot of stuff that goes through successfully. And new people too know this, say yes first. And I have to hold my tongue when a newbie comes in and says, why don't we do this? And I go, we tried that 7 times. And okay, say yes, sir. Tell me your idea. Tell me more. And then you hear it. So it's to help innovation. It's to help progress. It's to help to give people a voice.
Well, and I think it's such an important piece, and I really appreciate you, Sri, how you linked it to innovation, because again, if innovation, and it's a mindset that keeps you stuck. Well, we tried that before, this won't work here, and right away you're just operating from this is all the reasons that this isn't gonna even pop. We won't even entertain it. And then you say, well, if your end goal is innovation, what kind of environment are people gonna go, I want to raise my hand for this, versus the, hey, okay, tell me more about this. I've got another question from Carla, who's wondering, just looking at the future of leadership, and leadership being such a hot topic and these days, what are the skills, the qualities that you would suggest of leaders develop so that they can be effective in their roles?
Yeah. So you are an expert in this, Craig. So I'm sure you have a bit to add to this one. Leadership is so hard because you're managing the most complicated thing on this earth, people. What may work with certain people may not work with other people. What may work with a person today may not work tomorrow. The leadership ability to be ready for situational management, situational leadership, and to know that this situation calls for this kind of leadership, the exact same people may require another kind of leadership. So there is no graduation from leadership. It's continuous learning. It's continuous messing up and learning from that experience and trying it again. You just get a little better at it if you're lucky, picking the right leadership style for the right situation. So if you don't have style, if you only have one way of leading, then you're asking your entire company to adjust your style, or the board or whoever, to adjust to your style. But I think the best leaders are the ones who adjust to the person they're dealing with style. You know, so you've got to have, I don't know, dozens, if not hundreds of different styles ready to go. When you're dealing with your board of directors who are extremely smart, extremely successful, understand the business deeply, you're going to use a different style than when you're talking to your call center who is trying to amaze them every time, but needs it in a different way, and how do you motivate and pump them up? So I would say my natural style is to try to get consensus, but I keep toning, oh, consensus isn't right here. We got to go hard here and we're going to do this. But hopefully you build enough points with your team and things that they understand if you've gone another way, there's a reason. We could make a very long answer even longer. What I also try to tell employees and the team sometimes is, sometimes you can be observing from a distance and you hear a decision and it's so easy to go, oh, why did they make that decision? That's terrible. They didn't think of this or that, or I can't believe it. I thought they were smart. Maybe they're not. You know, it's very easy from the sidelines to do that. But, I always did this, but the wording around it, I got from Obama's book, which was, he says, sometimes you have to make the least bad decision. And to me, that was like, whoa. I've been doing that a lot. I just didn't know that's what it's called. So sometimes you have to make a decision, but none of them are perfect. None of them are going to keep every constituent and every group happy. But you've looked at it as a team, you've analyzed it, and you say, well, if we do this, these things are too hard to swallow. If we do this, that's going to be a little bit hard to swallow. Let's do this. So I go around and say, sometimes we make the least bad decision. So if you don't have all the facts, you need to trust your leadership that that's what they're doing, instead of second guessing them all the time and then making it for disruptive water cooler talk. Can you believe they made that decision? So I'll give you a very big example of that. Work from home, hybrid. We chose to be very transparent about what the world's doing. We call it a global experiment. Nobody has the answer. There's no book. Now there's been a couple of books written, but here's the facts. Here's what our competitors are doing. Here's what different countries are doing. Here's what our space is doing. As you can see, it's all over the space. As a result of that, we're choosing this. May not be perfect, but that's what we're choosing. And then we keep informing them. It's not over. Every quarter we do here's what the world is doing on this hybrid. Here's where we are. Sometimes we get negative reaction. Oh my God, they're setting us up. They're going to ask us to be more. Again, we'll take that fast negative reaction, but we're being transparent and they know we made the decision with the best facts that we could. We weren't an outlier going on our gut. So that's an example of it.
Well, and thank you. And again, lots of great comments in there. And thank you for sharing and great insight. And it's a quality that comes out over and over. And I think you demonstrated beautifully in the examples that you've provided, you, Sri, is around taking an empathetic approach, which is, so what's going on in each of the stakeholders that I'm interacting with? So same thing with when you were doing those group meetings. Hey, I get it. I understand where you are. Hey, here's what's... These are the things that people may want to hear from us, asking questions, being curious about things. So the more we can be aware of other people's realities, as you say, it's not going to unlock a perfect decision, yet we can incorporate all of that in a really powerful way. And I love how you distinguish it from, you know, you've got rather than one tool in the toolbox, hey, there's a whole bunch. Now, what does the situation and the people within it require from me at this time?
Yeah.
I've got another question. I'm not surprised. I said before we jumped on, you, Sri, and I were talking, I said, I'm guessing AI is probably going to come up. So Henry was wondering, you know, so much on artificial intelligence, machine learning, ChatGPT. What are your thoughts in terms of how that's going to impact organizations and what leaders need to do to navigate this next shift?
I don't know, but what I do know is you better engage it. Like if you're going to ignore it and be behind and then it does take off, you know, when Facebook was new, where I was, we engaged it early. We didn't know if it had business implications or not. When Snapchat was new, same thing. I'm old enough. When computers were new, I was at a company that had one computer in the corner and you signed up for it. And I was one of the first ones who signed up every day to make my job easier, when laptops were new, when smartphones were new. So you got to embrace them early and not be afraid, even though you might think the consequences are scary. But certainly, if you embrace them early. So what I also believe is they're here to stay. It's not a fad that's going to go away. And ChatGPT is in beta for 6 months and it's already unbelievable. So I'm playing with it. And so is some of our team. We also have to be careful with some security. You know, you can't have all the employees playing with it because it sucks information out all the time. So there's cyber issues that you do. But I think with these things, you've got to embrace, assume it's here to stay. How does it affect your business? even if you don't get it perfect, you're in the game as it keeps evolving and moving and shifting, and to just say, we don't need it. I remember two more examples that I think ChatGPT and AI is in the same bucket. I was with a company that we went around and say, you should have a website. I don't need a website. I got great brochures. I get my information from the trade show. Who needs a website? Nobody needs a website. Like, who doesn't have a website now? Like, everybody has a website. It's like table stakes. And then when I was at Kinetics, you mentioned Kinetics. Kinetics was in the digital world. And you'd go to company and say, what's your digital strategy? We don't need a digital strategy. We've got a nice website. We get everything we can. Now, if you don't do digital, what's wrong with you? Like, everybody has a digital in some way, either to help make you efficient internally or to be client focused. I think ChatGPT AI are in that category right now. There are some people saying, I don't know. But it's here to stay. It's going to be part of it. So we're learning. We're practicing. I don't know how we're going to use it, but it's going to help us. And I don't know how yet.
Well, and I love that orientation in terms of, and I couldn't agree more, user either. It's here. And so pretending, putting our heads in the sand, ignoring it, like that's not. And now it's, so how are we going to engage in it? What do we need to learn about it? How do we consider and how it fits within, and asking thoughtful questions around it? And as well as, we don't know, there's lots of open-ended questions that need to be filled in, and just pretending it's not there, or no, we're fine, we don't need a website, we're going to be left behind. So we want to engage with this. So the time has flown by. We only have a few minutes left, so I may have time for one, if not two questions. I'd love to hear from you. You went through this remarkable transformation. Like, what's one big lesson you learned about yourself as you led the organization through? And what's a big lesson you learned about Home Capital Group, Home Trust, as you led the organization through this? I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
You just take things one day at a time, one elephant bite at a time, one day at a time. You just put one foot forward. There are days that are going to knock you back three or four steps. And you keep moving forward. Some of the challenges, without going into exhaustive detail, were bigger than I thought. I thought I'd get them fixed sooner. Others were quicker. Others we got, done quicker. So you just keep moving forward. So I've always known this about myself, but I now know it for sure, is that I don't look back. I don't regret. I don't wonder, should I have joined, or what if I wasn't doing this? I'm here. Let's make the best of it. Let's get everybody on the same page. Let's be honest with employees. And the employees of Home are amazing. You know, we're talking about me, but once they embrace this stuff, what they did to win, Bank Lender of the Year from the depths of low that we hit only 6 years ago, to win it five times in a row, that was a lot of people working really hard to make a lot of people happy and make sure. So as we were fixing Home, the pandemic hit and we all had to scramble Home, and the stock price went down again like it did for every institution. But I can tell you, the Home team handled the pandemic exceptionally well. They were crisis management professionals. And the rest of the market didn't know how to handle a crisis. We went home. We did this. Nobody panicked. We set up committees. We did that. Everything moved. And I was sitting and watching. It wasn't my great leadership. I was just sitting and watching and going, oh my God, they're good. They're really good. They do not panic in a crisis anymore. We were very, 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 very well prepared. Like, it was a calm over the camp. Yep, we'll get through this. We've been through much worse, and we were by ourselves. Now we're with the whole world, and we know how to handle this. So for Home Capital, if you're not in the mortgage space, Home invented the market for mortgages for self-employed and new immigrants. It's difficult for self-employed and new immigrants to get a mortgage at the banks. And it's not because they're poorer quality, not at all. It's just they require a lot more work. New immigrants don't have FICO score. They don't have a long enough beacon score that people can say, that lenders can say, oh, you're a good payer. They don't. So we look a little deeper to understand them. And self-employed don't have a T4 slip. They have financial statements. If you're lucky, maybe bank statements. They're very good at what they do. So Home opened this space 40 years ago, and now there are a lot of other competitors. What's important for Home to reestablish itself is, imagine if no self-employed person or no immigrant could get a home until they were here and established their credit. Not only would the mortgage market look different, or the housing market would look different, but the entire Canadian GDP would look different. So that was an important part of not letting Home fail. It was an important part of the entire ecosystem. So we're back. The ecosystem is healthy. People have homes, and they're always going to want and ask for them. Nobody asks for mortgages. They're always going to want homes. And so that's a lot of pride, not just for me, but for the 900 employees who work here. We are very proud of what we do and what we've made possible for many Canadians.
Well, and thank you. This is great. And we're closing down now. And Melissa just shared, thank you so much, Yousry. This was not only inspiring, it was very insightful. So loved hearing from you. So so yes, and I echo those comments. So we've got a minute or so left. So Yousry, this was just fantastic. Again, the time always flies. So much really great nuggets to take away. Any final words, thoughts, parting messages for people here this afternoon?
Yeah, just as if you're an upcoming new leader, don't be afraid of failing. You're going to mess up. People are very complicated. If you build computers or cars, they do exactly what you tell them. People don't. You know, so, you know, it's okay to mess up. It's okay to experiment. Try to be in their shoes when you're choosing which situational style you're going to give. Have some consideration to how they might react before you open your mouth. And then you're more prepared. It's like preparing for a meeting. So I love new leaders who are trying to learn because they can read your book. It will definitely help, Craig, but it does not give them every situation. There's no way. So it's okay to mess up and just keep going and grow.
Well, and thank you for that. And I couldn't agree more that it's a lifelong journey. As soon as someone says, oh, well, I'd figure this out, now you followed behind because there are new situations, new people, new circumstances. And it's constantly just reprogramming, reconfiguring, and being open to, as you shared earlier, there's a lot of different pathways. What pathway is the best for this particular situation? And it might not be the same next week. So this has been amazing. You're just a wonderful, an extraordinary chief executive and just a fantastic human being. So love your willingness to share today. And it's always my pleasure. And to everyone who tuned in today, I'm sure you got, of all the comments that I've got, just great, great stuff. So looking forward to seeing you on the next episode of Do Good to Lead Well. And until then, take care, get out there and learn and have fun.
Thank you so much for joining me here today on Do Good to Lead Well. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you'd like to continue the conversation, you can follow me on Twitter at Craig Dowden, or reach out via LinkedIn or email info@craigdowden.com. I look forward to meeting you here next week for another transformational episode.